side conversation. Okay.
Okay, good morning, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this meeting of the Orange County Housing and Community Development Commission for Thursday, August 28th, 2025. We are going to say the Pledge of Allegiance. So please stand and join me in honoring our flag of our great nation. Commissioner Carvalho, would you like to lead us in a pledge?
Sure. Put your hand over your heart. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you so much. We will now proceed to the agenda for this morning's meeting. The agenda contains a brief general description of each item to be considered. Except as otherwise, as provided by law, no action shall be taken on any item not appearing on today's agenda. Public comments are not unlimited and do not include the right to defame or slander. The use of profanity that causes a disturbance or disruption in the proceeding and is truly objectionable is not allowed, and it may cause us to have to take a recess from the meeting. Public comments must be within the subject matter jurisdiction of this commission. As such, attacks on persons who are not subject to the jurisdiction of the commission will not be heard. Madam Clerk, will you please call roll?
Yes, good morning. Ms. Carrie Buck?
Present.
Thank you. Ms. Stephanie Otto?
Here.
Dr. Tiffany Mitchell? Second call for Dr. Tiffany Mitchell. Mr. Wayne Carvalho?
Here.
Ms. Carla Wilkerson?
Here.
Ms. Helen Smith Gardner?
Here.
Mr. Mike Frost?
Here.
Ms. Cecilia Hutt? Second call for Ms. Cecilia Hutt. And then, Madam Chair, Mr. Fat Bui, Ms. Tracy Law, and Mr. Mike Alvarez are excused today. Madam Chair, we have quorum, and I'd like to announce some housekeeping items before we begin. Please note that if quorum is lost due to members leaving early or other reasons, the chair shall promptly end the meeting. If you wish to comment on a specific agenda item in person, please complete the speaker request form identifying the item number, your name, and deposit the completed form in the box located next to the clerk. To speak on a matter not appearing in the agenda but under the jurisdiction of the HNCD Commission, you may also do so during public comment items. Speaker request forms must be deposited prior to the beginning of the consent calendar, the reading of the individual agenda items, the opening of public hearings, and or the beginning of public comment item. When your name is called, please come to the podium and begin your comment by stating your name or pseudonym for the record. Members of the public desiring to speak should address all remarks and questions to the commission. Speakers may address the commission on up to three occasions, with 3 minutes allotted to the speaker per occasion.
Thank you so much. We'll now move on to the approval of the summary of the minutes of the meeting held on June 26, 2025. Madam Clerk, do we have any public comments for this item?
No request to speak on approval of minutes have been received.
Thank you so much. I'll now entertain a motion.
I'll second.
Okay. Commissioner Carvalho moved the motion and Commissioner Frost made the second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, motion carries unanimously. Okay, at this time, members of the public may address the HNCD Commission regarding any items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the Commission, provided that no action shall be taken on off-agenda items unless authorized by law. Speakers will have 3 minutes to address the Commission, and the clerk will run the timer and announce when your time has expired. Madam Clerk, have you received any public comments?
No requests to speak on public comments have been received.
Okay, thank you so much. We'll now move on to the consent calendar. We have an item by January Johnson, Housing Manager, our Section 8 Management Assessment Program. And go ahead. Thank you so much.
Good morning, everyone. January Johnson, Housing Manager for Orange County Housing Authority. For many of you, this is going to be just a refresher. For all of you, I think this is going to be a refresher that's here today. Every year, at the end of each fiscal year, HUD requires housing authorities to conduct a self-assessment of their performance over the previous fiscal year. That's called the Section 8 Management Assessment Program, CMAP for short. And we then submit our assessment to HUD for evaluation, and they will run some numbers on the back end of files that we've submitted to them as well, and we will ultimately be scored. You can be scored as a high performer, a standard performer, and a troubled housing authority. For 18 consecutive years, or for 17 consecutive years, OCHA has scored as a high performer, which is 90% of your overall scoring. And we anticipate for this year that we will also have a high performer rating of 90% or above for the 18th consecutive year. And we will get the official response in fall, so we'll probably be announcing that in an October or November meeting, what our final score is.
That's it? That's your report? Okay. Thank you so much. Any questions? Well, congratulations on being a high performer for 18 years in a row. We appreciate your work.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We're all good. Okay. So I'll entertain a motion to receive and file agenda item 7. Any?
I'll motion.
Okay. I have a motion by Commissioner Smith-Gardner. Can I get a second?
I'll go second.
Okay.
Farla will proceed.
Okay, seconds. And all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, motion carries unanimously. Okay. We now have a calendar. We have a discussion item, Falling Through the Safety Net by Zulima Lundy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Selima Lundy. I'm the Director of Operations in the Office of Care Coordination. And I'm here to do a brief overview of a study that our office conducted in 2025. We are calling the study Falling Through the Safety Net. And I would note that we provided the full deck of the presentation, but due to time constraints, I will kind of be breezing through some slides. But I would also like to invite you to participate at an upcoming meeting that we're going to be hosting. It's going to be a joint meeting of the Commission to Address Homelessness and the Orange County Continuum of Care Board. That meeting is on September 10th. And it is actually also live streamed on the county's YouTube page. So if you're not able to attend in person, we'll make sure to give that information to the clerk so that they can share it with you. So we'll go ahead and go to the next slide. The Office of Care Coordination is primarily responsible for conducting the point in time count every year for the shelter component and every 2 years for the unsheltered component. We have kind of gotten into a cadence of conducting some sort of study on the off years that we're not conducting an unsheltered point in time count, which is how we ended up with this study. Following the results of the 2024 point in time count, we found that nearly half of individuals who were experiencing unsheltered homelessness at the time reported that this was the first time experiencing homelessness in the last 12 months. And we thought this was particularly notable because that number had been much lower in previous point in time counts. And to us, it indicated an influx into homelessness that perhaps we needed to better understand. Next slide, please. So the Commission to Address Homelessness primarily looks at homeless services in kind of like four main pillars: prevention, outreach services, shelter, and housing. And thinking about this inflow into homelessness, we really thought that understanding the needs of people falling into homelessness and also what types of interventions would be most helpful to hopefully prevent them from entering and experiencing homelessness, we want to kind of focus on the prevention and some of the outreach and services efforts. The study was really a partnership between CityNet, who's our contracted provider, for also the unsheltered point in time count, the Commission to Address Homelessness, the COC, the Citizen Law Enforcement, as they supported us with some of the mapping and outreach efforts that we did during this time, and also the community-based organizations that offer street outreach in our across Orange County. Next slide, please. So a little bit about the methodology, and so what we decided to do is that utilizing the information from the 2024 point in time count, we determined that we would do somewhat of a representative sample, and we were looking to survey at least 20% of the unsheltered population that was identified during the point in time count, and we looked at that being across all the cities, to ensure that it was a proportionate representation, understanding that people experience homelessness differently in the north, central, and south service planning area, and that the availability of those resources or the geographical landscape also impacts that experience. The survey that we developed had anywhere between 50 to 70 questions, and it included conditional logic, meaning that based on how the respondent answered a question, it would either add additional questions or we kind of skip on to the next one, only asking about relevant experiences. The study was conducted in March 2025, and it was done primarily by CityNet. So this is notable because traditionally for the point in time count efforts, we rely very heavily on volunteers and also some of our professional homeless service providers. So this is all conducted by CityNet. And then we provided an incentive to participants. So either $5 if they kind of engage with us, but at the end said, you know what, this survey's not for me, or $25 if they completed the entirety of the survey. The number of questions that we asked, right, feels rather high, but most surveys were able to be completed in less than 20 minutes, which I feel is really a testament to people's willingness to engage and share their stories and really being receptive to the questions that we're asking in an effort to develop services and programs. Go ahead, next slide. Thank you so much. So two key factors that I like to highlight related to the survey as we go through this to keep in mind is one, that this is data that is self-reported. So, you know, you might reference other data sets or you might have other professional knowledge and experience that would make you question that data point, totally valid. And you'll probably see that little reminder, that icon throughout the presentation to like remind you, like it's a self-report, right? So like if it doesn't quite sit right or if it feels a little bit odd, keep that in mind. And then the other part is that our survey really only asked questions of people who were already experiencing homelessness, those that fell through the safety net, meaning that we are not capturing the experience of all those people who were at risk of homelessness and were able to avoid becoming homeless by either accessing their support networks or other services in the community. We are very interested in that population as well because we have to ask questions of like what worked well and why did it work well or what was the timing of those. Timing becomes really important as we go through some of the other slides. Next slide. So here a little bit about the engagement that we had of the people that CityNet approached on the streets. We had approximately a 73% participation rate, meaning that 840 people completed the entire survey with us. 840 is going to be our basic end of like a pool of respondents. And then if the question that is being reported on the slide is a subset, you're gonna see the N next to it, telling you what that subset category is. Next slide, please. So I mentioned that the survey covered kind of all cities and service planning areas. This is the number of surveys, kind of a cool graphic for us to display, but that is the breakdown kind of showing that geographic equity. That to us is really important because oftentimes we'll hear like that doesn't apply in our city or that is not relevant to us. So this way we can show like you are part of the results. Next slide, please. Consistent with other surveys, particularly the 2024 point in time count, the demographic information of the participants continue to align, which really shows that we have very similar people experiencing homelessness year over year. So this is our age range, our race and ethnicity. Next slide, please. Our gender and then our veteran population was rather small at 6.2%. Next slide, please. Okay, so this question here really looks at understanding how long people have experienced homelessness. You know, in the first initial slide, I indicated that nearly 50% of those had reported experiencing homelessness in the last 12 months. When we conducted the survey, that number had dropped down to 15%. So it may have been just a point in time where people were experiencing homelessness differently, and also that 15 is further broken down into like, what does that look like in terms of like weeks and months to try to understand people's experience. You will see that there is a bulk of the people who are experiencing homelessness for longer than 5 years. And those would traditionally kind of be the people that likely have disabling conditions as well and who we would consider to be experiencing chronic homelessness. Next slide, please. This slide here looks at the living conditions that people reported, whether it was outdoors, in vehicles, or recreational vehicles, like RVs. And the proportions kind of continue to remain the same from our 2023 survey that we previously conducted. So the report is broken up into these sections. We're going to be looking at how people, their life before they experienced homelessness, what were some of the factors that contributed to their homelessness, what services they looked to engage to prevent their experience of homelessness, and also some considerations of what their life looks like now that they have been experiencing homelessness for some time. Next slide, please. So something that was really interesting to us is that when we asked what was their housing situation, there was a broad range of answers, and we have 44% of people who reported living with friends or families, and that could perhaps be a like doubled up or tripled up situation, or it could also be a little bit of like couch surfing, not as stable housing conditions, and 37% indicated that they were paying rent. We had 6% homeowners, and then we had about 6% of people that were either staying in a, being discharged from a hospital or jail, or had some other sort of like not permanent accommodation. This next slide here looks at people's name either on the mortgage or lease or rental agreement. We thought this was important because oftentimes we think about an eviction process and working through the landlord kind of being the definitive point in which people experience homelessness. Here you see that only 36% of them had their name on the lease or a mortgage, which means that to an extent, the balance, roughly 61 or 62%, have probably already experienced some sort of housing instability or housing challenges that only continue to snowball. Next slide, please. Something that is also really important for us as we consider how people experience homelessness is their income and how income plays a factor into housing and other pieces. So at this point, prior to experiencing homelessness, 3/4 of them had an income, with the majority of them having an earned income, likely working. And then the other ones kind of tend to be some more mainstream benefits that people might be eligible for. This slide here looks at how much they reported making their gross monthly income. As you will see, the majority of them did not or nowhere near the Orange County median income. And then the other slide here looks at how much they paid towards rent, and they indicated that they were paying something towards rent. And you will see that the majority of them paid very small amounts, like less than $2,000. But you also see that we have 27% of them that did not pay any sort of rent. So once again, alluding to the their housing situation kind of being in flux prior to experiencing homelessness. Next slide here. We asked questions about like savings and debt, trying to understand some of their financial security. And you will see that the majority of them did not really have savings. And then the majority of them also surprisingly reported not having significant debt, which to us maybe also signifies really short like employment history or credit history that wouldn't allow them to kind of accumulate some. Something that really stood out to us was that the majority of people who were part of the survey had some sort of system engagement in a way that far surpassed our traditional national averages. And so here you see that nearly 9 times people experienced prior incarceration than the regular population. You know, nearly 33% more were in some sort of community supervision. So that criminal justice engagement piece is really something that stood out to us. And then people also have previous experience of living in subsidized housing, haven't been in either foster care or reported experiencing childhood poverty. And so when we talk about homelessness prevention, we often talk about the need to do a lot of work upstream and indicating that, you know, childhood experiences could potentially be contributing factors to homelessness. Here, this is the reported number of disabilities. I would note that these disability conditions as reported are in a little bit different format than we traditionally report our point-in-time count disability conditions or that you might be familiar to. And we can follow up with additional details, but you'll see the number of people experiencing a disabling condition prior to homelessness was rather low. But again, this is a self-report. Next slide. We also asked whether people had experienced any traumatic events and whether they thought that had impacted their life significantly, maybe contributing factor to homelessness. And nearly three quarters indicated yes, and they really thought that that played a role in their current situation. Next slide. When we asked generally about all the factors that they believe contributed to homelessness, we really saw two that really stood out, and one is financial and one is relationships. And that is something that we continue to kind of explore because we already know how much rent is, we know their income, we know their savings, and those are lacking. But relationships are hard to plan for in terms of like how you respond to them and how it impacts your housing. Next slide, please. So here it breaks down further factors for financial factors. The next couple of slides kind of break down the different categories. Go ahead. Between relationship factors. And then here you see when we only ask them to prioritize one of them, relationship and financial kind of continue to be the top two of them. Here, we asked about like how much notice did you have prior to experiencing homelessness? And what was really shocking to us is that the majority, 62%, indicated that they had less than 1 week notice. So again, this means that it was not a traditional eviction process that was going through the court, that was, you know, well noticed. But likely the doubling up and staying with family and friends that already have some housing instability. And then like when you look at that 62% further broken down, you'll see that the majority had like less than 24 hours notice. So this is also probably a part where like relationships play a role into their housing. Next slide. Here it kind of breaks down further factors around like where they lived and also what they consider to be their main factor contributing to homelessness. And then one of the big questions that we asked was like, did you seek any services to try to prevent your homelessness? We were really surprised that nearly only 12% reported that they did. And we think that is rather interesting. Is this a situation in which we need to do, be more available and or, you know, are these resources that we are offering, they're not immediate to resolve their situation or like trying to understand like, what would be the best prevention intervention that we as a system can provide down the road? So this is gonna be like a key takeaway and continued discussion for us. Next slide, please. The next couple of slides kind of indicate what type of services they sought to help, to receive help. Next slide. And whether that help could have improved their situation. So what is noteworthy to us here is that the majority of them were looking for some side of like rental assistance or financial assistance to address their housing needs, which continues to kind of highlight the importance of the Orange County Housing Authority, the Housing Choice Voucher Programs, and really the need for affordable housing in our community. Next slide, please. This slide looks at what type of assistance, if it was short-term, that would be helpful. The bulk of people really feel like they needed at least 6 months to kind of help stabilize and end their homelessness. Next slide, please. And then this one here also looks at that continued sort of resource that could support them in being housed as opposed to experiencing homelessness. Next slide, please. Another question that we asked was around people's household composition and trying to understand how homelessness impacted their households. So initially of the 840 people that we surveyed, 225 reported that they had a household composition that included children in their household. And now that they were experiencing homelessness, only 6 reported to still have children. So we thought this was interesting in terms of like, what does it impact for the family unit? Or could it have been that I am staying with my sister who has 2 kids and I have to exit the home and the kids stay with my sister because they're her kids and I am now experiencing homelessness. So thinking about like, What is a family and friends dynamics that maybe are considerations for how they support people and the services that they offer? I'm almost done, Carrie, then we can go to questions, so sorry. This question here looks at the income currently, and you can kind of see a comparison. The number of people with an earned income plummeted, and then you see an increase in some of the mainstream benefit assistance, but the increase is not quite proportional. Instead, we just see people not reporting having any income. Next slide here. And then the other piece is that we saw that people reported experiencing additional disabling conditions. However, they were largely similar to what they had reported as having experienced a disabling condition prior to experiencing homelessness. But this slide does indicate, right, that the more people experience homelessness or don't have housing, the detrimental impacts it has to their health. Next slide, please. This question here also looks about like the safety net and the ability to lean on people for support. And it looks like maybe the majority of them have burn bridges, or maybe they don't have additional support that they can lean into that maybe previously helped them. So only about 1/5 of them reported that they could receive some help from family or friends to help them with housing. Next slide, please. So this here provides some of the key findings that I already verbalized, but really some things that are really notable for us is that our study and its findings was consistent with other state and national studies around people's reasons into falling into homelessness and their experience now that they are homeless. And then I think something that continues to stand out to us is the need for financial assistance to help people overcome their homelessness and really to think through our safety net of resources and how people engage in those services. And that concludes my presentation. I will hand it back to you guys how you want to do comments or chairs.
Yeah, so thank you.
Thank you. Yes, I just want to make sure that I didn't need to get the public comments first, or can we do questions?
That's how we want to do it.
Okay. Public comments you prefer?
Yeah.
Okay. So do we have any public comments?
Madam Chair, no request to speak on discussion calendar has been received.
Okay, thank you so much. Now I'll open it up to questions and comments by the commissioners. Commissioner Buck.
Hi, Zila.
Okay.
So the slide that sticks out to me the most and I find most alarming is the one related to families. And just to point it out, so 850 respondents, 225 of those had families tied to them, had children tied to them, but only 6 of those 225 now have children that are in their care. So
the question was not worded
that
way.
Pardon?
The question was not worded that way. So I would just indicate the question was worded asking about their household composition. So it was like, prior to experiencing homelessness, how many adults were in your household? Prior to experiencing homelessness, how many children were in your household?
So it may not necessarily be their own children.
Correct.
If they were children within the household.
Yes.
But they no longer are. So I would love to dig deeper on that, mm-hmm. because that's a significant percentage if they are actually, like, you know, dependents and families are choosing to have their children go somewhere else. You can tie that directly back to the percentage of people that end up in homelessness who had childhood trauma. And it makes me angry and it makes me want to cry. 72% say that a traumatic experience played a role in that. So I just implore all of us, I know it's incredibly important, we all know how important housing is, and housing is for families. I've been working with families for a long time, and I always say, you know, we're missing the family side of it because we don't see them out in the streets like you would individuals, and that's an example of why. They do remain hidden. They're either afraid or it's just they have a place for their own children, and then they're actually separating as a result. So I just find that one incredibly emotional. So thank you for doing the survey and reporting this out. I'm going to use some of these notes to advocate for families in my work.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your comments. Commissioner Mitchell.
Thank you for the presentation. I always find the data very helpful. I guess my question is, now that we have this, what are next steps? What are we going to do with the information that we have?
Our intent is to convene the joint special meeting of the commission to address homelessness and the Orange County COC board to go through the presentation at length and really have a discussion about how we use this information to help inform our homeless response system and some of the considerations that we have to have. We imagine that the conversation will be robust in that setting and that will likely lead to a set of recommendations that we can continue to explore jointly in an implementation between both the commission and the COC board. But really, we are looking for partnership and support from all of our leaders and stakeholders in the homeless response system to support in diving deeper. I think just like Carrie mentioned, you know, this stands out to her. Every piece of the presentation will stick out to somebody else, and like really refining that to like an actionable item. So I think in terms of like exactly next steps, they're not fully fleshed out, but we imagine that the conversation and the joint meeting will really help us refine that, engage the interests of both the commission and the COC board to take action around certain areas.
I'll just reiterate on that. This is Stephanie Otto, that I believe we're cleared with the attorney. We can go to that commission meeting. There's no brown out thing. So I would encourage all commissioners, if you do want to take action and you do want to follow up on some of these things, to attend the September 10th meeting of the Commission to End Homelessness. Do we have a time on that one?
Yes, it's at 1 p.m.
1 p.m. And where's the location?
It is at the County Conference Center.
County
Conference Center.
Is that the new, what's the, okay, we'll get details on that to the commissioners if you're interested in attending, but you, we would encourage that. Okay, another question, Commissioner Buck.
Just one recommendation maybe, and you sort of alluded to that. So if there is a possibility to ensure that cities and schools are part of this conversation. So city council members should know that this is happening and some of this data, so that they are also aware, because we have to work together as a team to do that, as well as school board members, because we have we have declining enrollment statewide and in Orange County, and we have space available. As a school board member, we talk about this and we want to be part of that solution too. So making sure that we're bringing everybody to the table, maybe even in a subsequent meeting or just to broaden the scope of what we're working on, because I think that more people would be interested in hearing about it and coming to the table to help.
We are open to presenting to other commissions or groups if you guys would like us to. Like, feel free to reach out and we can coordinate that. Our meeting will be public, open to the public, and it's also recorded in live stream. So if maybe following the meeting you want to share that with your network and others, like, we can help package that information for you. I imagine that this is really like the beginning of the tour of presentations, and how we engage people around this data is going to be really critical in the next, at least the next year, just because we want to focus on stopping the flow into homelessness, not only just currently addressing homelessness.
Thank you for your comments. I think that's great. Commissioner
Smith Gardner, resident representative. I just have a couple of general questions. Is couch surfing considered technically homeless? I have an 84-year-old friend who's currently couch surfing.
The definition of homelessness has four different categories. It is eligible as one of the categories. However, how we look at prioritizing resources, it often looks at literal homelessness first.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that last sentence?
Of course. Whenever we're looking at talking about homeless services and who we serve first, we always prioritize helping people who are experiencing literally homelessness first, which is also not always helpful, but we understand that this is a gap in our system.
The slide that shows, that asks about who are they, past personal experiences, it reports that prior incarceration is 45%.
Yeah.
And probation or parole is 32%. Do those, does that confuse you?
Yeah.
So if you were priorly incarcerated, you're probably on parole.
Right.
Do you think those numbers cross over? Because that's 78% of people that are homeless.
We didn't ask about specific questions in regards to their criminal justice involvement, but it could be that there is an overlap in that population. Some people, for example, may be incarcerated for a low-level offense, and they do 2 days and they're out, and they no longer have a community supervision aspect of it. Other people, for example, may be incarcerated, and based on the conditions of their early release, may then be either on probation or parole. So I think there is likely an overlap between those percentages, but it is not exclusive.
That makes sense. As you said, my heart is also broken that 3/4 of people stated traumatic events played a role in their homelessness. And the sad thing is those traumatic events continue now on to the children. It's just an endless circle of traumatic events, which is very, very sad. The term emotional or behavioral disability, is that a term for mental health? I haven't heard that term.
Yes, it includes mental health. We can follow up with what is included in each disabling condition. As we look to refine the survey, we receive feedback from people with lived experience and from other experts in the field. And we receive feedback, particularly from a professional working with the Dale McIntosh, around how to be more sensitive in the wording that we utilize around disabling conditions, which is why you're seeing this language that maybe doesn't look as familiar.
And I think just one more comment or observation. 12% of people reported seeking help while at risk of experiencing homelessness. Okay, I read that wrong. I thought it meant while they were homeless. They weren't reaching out, but 12%. I think it's because of that 24-hour thing. You can't even anticipate it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's really scary. Okay, one more thing. Sorry, guys.
You're fine.
Okay, I got it. I got that one. Okay. I appreciate your time. And this is a remarkable amount of information. I appreciate it so much. Thank you. So many ways it can be used.
Thank you so much. This is Stephanie Otto. I'd like to follow up on Commissioner Buck's comments, and that is, will you be distributing this to cities, and will this go out this?
So the presentation is posted on our website.
Okay.
We currently don't have a targeted communication to cities around this.
Mm-hmm.
We do have representation from 3 city managers on our commission to address homelessness. And
okay.
They often serve as liaison with the other city managers to help share information in their own settings.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you so much.
I have one more question.
Yes, Commissioner Smith-Gardner.
The Commission to End Homelessness, is that the commission that was originally formed, that this was a long time ago, that said the 10-year plan to end homelessness? Is that the same commission? Or what happened to that?
The technical answer is no, because the Commission to End Homelessness sunset, and then a new Commission to End Homelessness was established, and then the bylaws of the Commission to End Homelessness were amended to become the Commission to Address Homelessness.
That's clear. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. Commissioner Frost.
Thank you, Chair. And again, this is just one of many inputs that goes into that meeting, right, on the 10th. Were you surprised at all that mental illness wasn't higher than 14.8%? Because what I did, I'm gonna take this back to our gal, Tamara. That just seems way low to me.
Self-reported,
yes.
Oh, self-reported, well, perhaps that's
you
it.
You know, in past surveys and also the point in time count when we've asked questions about behavioral health concerns, we have received responses that are much higher. Because of the wording of these questions, we feel like the disabling conditions that we were looking to really ask for were not as apparent to the respondents, and perhaps that led to a lower response rate. So I think internally what we are thinking is, while this language was softer and more considerate of people with disabling conditions, it maybe wasn't as direct or as conversational for the population to understand. And perhaps that we have to go back to how we traditionally ask these questions to kind of have consistency in those data points. But to your point, looking at the wording of the question and the reported number, it did feel very low to us.
And because it's one of many inputs, I think it's okay. If this was the only input, I think I'd be a little concerned that it, I mean, obviously everybody's gonna say I need more money, right? Of course, that's the reason why I'm homeless. I mean, that one's pretty obvious, but I agree. It sure sounds to me like in our key findings, in the very back, before homelessness, you know, we probably, I would have highlighted some sort of family turmoil, like Carrie Buck was saying in that second box, or incarceration. Those two seem to have, or maybe it is system involvement incarceration? Was that kind of the concept there in that box?
Yes.
Oh.
I would also note, looking at the factors, we didn't include so explicitly like substance use problems or mental health concerns that could maybe have been a factor. As part of my follow-up, I can detail what we kind of describe as part of the systemic factors, the financial factors, so you can kind of see where our wording alluded to. I think what we're learning always is, you know, the wording of the question matters, and perhaps some of our questions could have been improved, and we'll take that as lesson learned and work to improve it for our next survey, collect, you know, more robust information.
It was a really good survey. I mean, these are small criticisms. I just, you know, it's always, we always need more money. But that second box sure seems to be important. Maybe more focus on what happens before. But thank you. I think it's one of many inputs to that meeting, I think. Thanks for letting
me. Thank you so much. Commissioner
Carvalho. Wayne Carvalho, gotta be honest. Information data overload for me, but what I got out of it, I do remember a slide. I don't think I see it here in our handout, but the one that stood out was having to do with the question, how recent have you experienced homelessness? And there, I remember seeing a high percentage within the last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there was something that said, within the last year, you broke it down even further, within the last 6 months. So that just leads me to believe that, you know, the numbers within the last year have gone up, and you know, it's more urgent that we address it. So that's what I took out of that one slide. So 15%, and then, you know, 50% of that within the last 6 months have experienced homelessness. So that's just a lot.
Thank you.
So.
Any more comments?
I have a comment.
Yes,
Carla Wilkerson. So what stood out to me is one that you highlighted, which was the 12% reported seeking help while at risk. And it's like 83% did not seek assistance, or they sought assistance after becoming homeless. Yeah, that's just disheartening that for some reason, it was a low number of people seeking assistance prior to. Feels like that's some sort of gap. The other thing is under living conditions, that slide. I know at one point, if you lived in an RV, you weren't considered homeless, but now it's non-operable, if they're not reported to be non-operable.
Yeah, so the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development has a very particular definition for people residing in RVs, and it really looks for the RVs to either be like dilapidated, not in working condition, not like plugged into sewer. So for example, if you are on an extended vacation RVing through the nation and you're plugging in your RV, then you wouldn't be considered to be experiencing homelessness. But we have subsequent questions asking about the conditions of the RV. Like, is it in good working condition? Is it drivable? Are you connecting to sewer? And if the answers are no, that's how we get to the unoperable footnote.
So on that slide, Commissioner Wilkerson again, on that slide, there's other. What are the others, if I could ask?
The others could, for example, be living in an abandoned building, living in like a transportation centers, like places not meant for human habitation. Traditionally, the majority of people kind of report living unsheltered, like on the streets, in a park, and that's where we put it outdoors. But the other category, it would be conditions are, as a whole, not meant for human habitation.
Thank you. Okay, we are running a little bit late right now, because we do have some reports that we need to hear. Is it something?
No.
Okay, I'll just add one thing, because this is Stephanie Otto. Commissioner Wilkins said the same comment for me. That's what stood out to me, was people were not asking for help, and I was wondering if that was a pride thing. I don't know if that's right. They just were not wanting to ask for help, and maybe that's part of the reason why, you know, that's contributes.
Carrie Buck, if I could just ask, because this is my wheelhouse. This is the work I do all the time. So this stuff, it totally makes me so happy that we see this. We kind of alluded to it in many ways. It's all about prevention. So people don't reach out because we typically have not had any prevention in the county. So if they call and ask for it, it's not there. We have just a small amount of test money that we have now through that the county, the Board of Supervisors each kind of put in based on their own area. It's called HPSP, but it's a limited amount and it's very specific, and we're trying to use the data to figure out what that looks like. But without prevention, people don't ask for it and they don't get it. And so it really comes back to all that. If we had something available really fast, in that time they're getting that, we would be able to fix that, but we don't, so they don't know where, you know, it's this whole big loop. And we're doing a lot to react, but we are putting some effort toward preventing that, but we need a lot more effort.
Great, okay. If it's not, is it?
Real quick. It's just taking a look back at this slide, you guys. It says 12% reported seeking help while at risk of experiencing homelessness. Okay, so maybe they didn't even know they were at risk. But 51.7% after becoming homeless did seek help. So it's good to look at that slide.
Okay, let's move on. I entertain a motion to receive and file agenda item 8. Who's that? I'm making a motion for that.
Frost.
Okay, Frost and a second. Okay, Commissioner Hupp, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, seeing none, that motion carries.
Madam Chair, sorry to interrupt you before we move on to the next item.
Yes.
I'd like to announce for record for Ms. Dr. Tiffany Mitchell and for Ms. Cecilia Hupp, they are present at our meeting.
Okay, there are no public hearing items at this time, so we'll move on to reports of staff and or commission members. January Johnson, Orange County Housing Authority update, please. Thank you.
Good morning again. This is January Johnson from the Orange County Housing Authority. I will take my paragraph down to one sentence. in tying to sort of what Zulima was sharing, prevention is great. Orange County Housing Authority is one of those prevention options, right? So I'm happy to announce that we did apply for additional HUD MASH vouchers. Every year they do an opening for registration of interest, and we will find out in by the end of 2025 or the beginning of 2026 if we receive any more vouchers. Last time we did this, we got 50. So that was a great number for us. That is my update.
Thank you so much. Okay, moving on. Craig Fee, Community Development Manager.
Good morning, Craig Fee, Community Development Manager. My long report, I shortened. The fiscal year 24-25 Consolidated Annual Performance and Evaluation Report. But what that is, at the beginning of the year, I came to you with the annual action plan, which basically sets the goals for the coming year. The CAPR is a report on how we satisfy those goals or reach those goals. And it's going to be out for public review starting tomorrow.
Excellent. Questions? Thank you so much. Thank you. Okay. And Housing Development, Michelle Zadiba, Housing Development Manager.
Hi, good morning. Michelle Zadiba, Housing Development Manager. Quick update, since the last time we had a meeting, we've had one project review advisory panel meeting where the PRAP members reviewed the Aspen Port project, which is in the city of Lake Forest, and we moved it forward from threshold into underwriting. Once we get to the point where we complete with underwriting, we'll bring it back to PRAP for consideration. Our next PRAP meeting is September 11th. Anyone have any questions? Oh, yes, and we also have a groundbreaking today. I believe it's at 1 o'clock in the city of Costa Mesa for the 1400 Bristol Home Key Project. So hopefully we will see you all there.
I will be there.
Great, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Okay, and finally, our Julia Bidwell, Executive Director, Secretary's report.
Yes, good morning, everybody. Julia Bidwell, Executive Director, Orange County Housing Authority, Director of OC Housing Community Development. Just wanted to give you an important update on emergency housing vouchers. We've spoken about this before. It's in the OCHA report. But originally, the purpose of the program was to provide housing assistance to individuals and families experiencing at risk of homeless, domestic violence, or human trafficking. All the referrals came to the Housing Authority from the continuum of care system in those categories. We received 557 vouchers, of which 522 are currently active. It was a program that if somebody got off assistance, we don't get that voucher back. So it just was a decreasing program. We received the 21st largest allocation in the country out of 600 housing authorities that received allocations. March 2025, HUD announced no new funding. So it was to be a sunsetted program, but originally was thought to be 2035. But now October 2026 is our expected end of the funding for the program. HUD's guidance that we received was to transition EHV households to the Housing Choice Voucher Program. However, the Housing Choice Voucher Program is insufficient to maintain current levels, and no new HCV waitlist selections since 2013. As you may know, we still have not exhausted our 2012 waiting list. So right now, we're working with national organizations. January and I were just on a call with National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials, or NARA, which is the national organization that represents housing authorities. We're going to be working with local and regional partners. So we've already been to commission to address homelessness and some of their partners. And it becomes a dual track. January's busy working on crunching numbers and everything that is available to us to close that gap if we were to absorb them in the Housing Choice Voucher Program. But we also have to come forward with policies to the Board of Supervisors, such as the change to the administrative plan. So we'll be informing you as we take those steps. But one track is just sort of a technical and systematic train to see what we can do. And the other part of that is the partners. If we do feel that we don't have enough funding and we need to transition any of these individuals, what are the partners around that table? Because again, these were individuals that were homeless, at risk of homeless, domestic violence, and human trafficking that received the vouchers. The other track is advocacy. So working with the county's Townsend Public Affairs is our legislative advocacy group in Washington, D.C., working with NARA, and it may be a longer track there. And what is coming by way of appropriations, not for just 2026, but for 2027, and what we can do. So just wanted to inform you that we've been talking about it. We're just ringing this bell a year in advance, a little bit harder right now, gathering everybody into the tent that could make a difference for the, you know, the individuals on the program. It's no fault of theirs that the funding, you know, is running out. So that's just an important effort that we're taking on right now, and we'll keep you advised on that. My second, and I'm going to try to shorten this up, Congress has yet to pass the final appropriations bill. The House and the Senate for Housing Choice Vouchers is ones at 90% of the amount needed. That's the House. The Senate is 93% of the amount needed for the Housing Choice Voucher Program. Neither of the appropriation bills are sufficient to cover the costs associated with inflation on the program. We still have to see what's going to happen there. Congress is returning from recess, so we should have more information in the next several weeks. This also impacts the CDBG and home programs potentially. the Senate calls for a decrease in the amount of funding for CDBG and flat funding for home, but the House proposal includes flat funding for CDBG, but the elimination of the home program. So those are two wildly different appropriations bills, so we'll see where we land on that. So that's just, I try to do that quick. And that's the end of my report.
Thank you so much. Okay, at this time, members of the agency decommission may comment on agenda or non-agenda matters and ask questions of or give directions to staff, provided that no action shall be taken on non-agenda items unless authorized by law. Do we have any comments by commissioners? Yes, Commissioner Frost.
Oh, thank you, Frost. Sure. Just one quick question, Julia. Okay, so we're, for next year, 93%, and it doesn't meet inflation, so conceptually we don't have as much as we do this year. But, and I've asked this before, we obviously have enough to not kick people off, but not forever, right? And so, I mean, is that significantly concerning? And what would we do if we couldn't, if theoretically we had to kick people off? Would we go to the Board of Supervisors and ask for something out of their general fund? Or like, how would January, how would that work? And are we even close?
Yeah, she might be able to shorten this answer.
Okay, so in our administrative plan, January Johnson, Orange County Housing Authority Housing Manager, every housing authority is required to have an administrative plan established. Within that administrative plan, you have to talk about what happens if you have limited funding.
Yep.
And there has to be an established process of the steps you take in order to support the people that you are already supporting. We have that. So in our administrative plan, we do outline what happens. The way that we have been able to not keep people off the program is because there's a natural attrition rate when it comes to the housing authority. So over time, you usually are losing some staff or some clients. We just can't replace those clients. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't replace your clients, your program shrinks. Mm-hmm. And as your program shrinks, you receive less funding. And as you receive less funding, your program further shrinks.
Almost like a snowball.
And the program is not designed to grow. The program is designed to shrink, even though they don't tell you. And that is the intent of the program. And so we have about a 6% attrition rate. That 6% attrition rate does make it so that we can continue to support those who are already on the program. But it means that we can't serve anybody on the waiting list. And our program has shrunk for the next year.
Got it.
And then, this is Julia Bidwell. If I may brag a bit about your housing manager, she's so far out in front of this. Housing authorities can get into a shortfall position. And previously, HUD had funding for housing authorities in shortfall, which has become less and less the case. But in managing the program for the Orange County Housing Authority, January was managed to keep us out or get us out of shortfall. We were in shortfall for a little bit, but keep us out of shortfall. And that is just by what she just mentioned in being able to say, okay, I need to stop issue. I need to, if we're gonna have people with vouchers and maintain them on the program, and I've got this turnover rate and balancing that with our next year's budget, it's incredibly hard. Los Angeles landed into large shortfall. Obviously, they're a much bigger program, but they continued to take people off their waiting list until last year. We stopped that in 2023. And so it is just being mindful. I think the priority is not to have people lose their housing. Obviously, we wish we had enough resources to take people off of, you know, the waiting list. But I just, January just such a tremendous job at trying to forecast so many complex things that are going on. And the other reason about in benefit of being out of shortfall is that you get to apply for new FYI vouchers. If you're in shortfall, you do not get to apply for new vouchers. So so that's been a benefit to us. And so, yeah, thank you, Mike, for asking that question.
I've asked it before and then I forgot the answer. Okay. I apologize.
Thank you, Commissioner Cross. Just to underline, though, we are worried about those emergency housing vouchers, those people right now, right?
We're focused on it. Again, there's not too much pressure on January. In fact, the pressure's on me to support somebody as capable of January and finding some solutions.
Uh-huh.
We are looking technically, she's talking to HUD at least every week. Hopefully she's nodding her head back there, about where we land on technical factors.
Yeah.
We're hoping we can solve the one track, but we just think it would not be responsible of us not to tell the community that there's a chance.
Yeah.
That, you know, when this funding runs out, if we don't, you know, end up right at the end of the runway taking off.
Well, Stephanie Otto, we have all the faith in your all's mm-hmm. ability, and we know that you are trying your best. We also know there are circumstances beyond your control, so we appreciate you very much. Anything else?
Just a really quick question.
Yes, and then
out there in the real world, there's some scuttlebutt about landlords being really concerned about, is the funding going to end? Do I rent to this person who has a Section 8 and has had a Section 8, let's say, because, you know, all the rumors that you hear like, politically, what would you say to that landlord?
That was Commissioner Smith-Gardner.
Yeah, so we... it's always an annual appropriations process, and it has been since the beginning of time. So this year is really no different than any other year.
Well,
and the Housing Choice Voucher Program, we are good for this year when you talk about 2025 and the year that we're in. Obviously, we're looking to the future, but also important to invite them into the tent. They're going to be our biggest advocates. Nobody wishes to have evictions because somebody had a subsidy and is now in the unit and cannot pay their rent. So I think we, you know, invite them to the conversation to help support us.
Great. Thank you so much. Okay. We are now adjourned. Our next scheduled meeting will be September 25th. Thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you.